You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this star time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Brothers. I'm Simon from York.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Could you say that episode name again, please, Simon? I'm not sure what I just heard.
Tonight's episode is Brothers.
Brothers! There we go. Okay. Yeah, Simon, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Lou.
And, I'm sorry, where did you say you're from?
York, in the north of England.
North of England. So you're not even in England? York, is that Yorkshire? York camps? What is it?
Yorkshire, yes.
Yorkshire. York's in Yorkshire. So York is a city in Yorkshire, which are the shires around York.
Okay.
Do you not use the term north of? Do you guys not use that term in America?
Not really. No, I'm not. I'm not north of Kansas, if that's what you mean.
So I suppose. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I am south of.
What's north of England? Scotland.
So are you in Scotland, Simon?
No, I'm south of Scotland.
South of Scotland, but he's in northern England.
Okay, everybody got that? Good. So, Simon, you haven't been on for a while. I could kind of take a look as to when you were on last, but why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself there?
I'm just a big Star Trek fan. I've been watching it for as long as I can remember. A few years back, I started listening to Trekmate, and your show started, and started listening to the show, and I'm a big fan, and Next Gen is my favorite of the Star Treks, but I kind of like them all, really.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and as I'm going to cue up a little music for this right about now, because Doc just put in the words in chat, new baby. So I know he didn't have a new baby, nor did his wife.
It's not that new. About 8 months old.
8 months old.
But it's your first baby as well, right?
First baby, yes.
And a first baby stays nude for a long, long time.
Hmm.
Okay. No, and we've asked you before whether or not you managed to get away with Tiberius as the middle name.
No, I didn't manage that.
Oh, wait. Okay, so the baby's name is Jim?
James, yes.
James? Oh, aren't you honored, James? That's right. The last time you were here was in September. So obviously, you know.
Yeah, it was very new then.
Very, very new. Well, then, if you're wondering, where was that music he mentioned? Well, there's no reason, because it's all about Desi Arnaz singing, there's a brand new baby in our house. But, hey, that's not a brand new baby. Might as well can let it go. Okay, so what do you do for work?
I'm an IT manager for a company in New York.
Oh, in New York. That's amazing. Do you go to New York often? I'm kidding. I know what you mean. New York, New York, guys. Get it? New York, New York, New York. Never mind. All right. And you wanted to come talk to us about Brothers.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Now, actually, Lou, let me just, before you go any further, let me ask Simon whether or not, are you coming to the Destination Star Trek Birmingham this year? Are you managing?
I am, yes, all three of us.
Excellent, excellent. Because I have yet to buy tickets. So, you know, I suppose as kind of listeners will know, they've got the conference. I'm about to use the word conference. They've got the Star Trek convention over here in England this year, towards the end of the year. It's taking place in Birmingham rather than in London. And they keep announcing new people are turning up. Because I think last time we did a bit of a roundup, I was a bit dismissive of their guest list. But we have had new people announced since then. So I think George Takei is confirmed as coming.
Yes, George Takei, Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton's there. The Gorn. Mr.
Yeah, Gorn they have himself. To have the Gorn each time.
I mean, I think you'd have to pay for him not to turn up, surely. Hoshi's turning up from Enterprise. It's starting to build up a relatively decent momentum.
Yeah.
I have yet to get tickets, but it's... I mean, unless I kind of die in a car crash, I will be there.
Oh. Okay. I hope not, because I'm looking forward to seeing you in August.
Ah, well, this is in October, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh. Yeah, October.
Okay, then you can have the car crash after August.
Actually, I don't know if I mentioned, but when I kind of decided to go for the plunge and actually say, look, I will go to Vegas this year, there was no sign at all of there being a UK-based convention. Mm. And pretty much as I was buying the tickets, they didn't decide to announce this. And I did think... Oh, did I really have to make the trek out to Las Vegas? But I suspect that Las Vegas offers something slightly different than Birmingham and the NEC. And I think most people in the UK would probably agree to that.
Okay. Okay, so let's see. Simon, I put the synopsis information in the chat. If you have found it, you are welcome to continue on, and welcome again to the show.
Okay. The synopsis for tonight's show is Data jeopardizes an emergency mission to save an ill child when he gets a signal from his creator. This is the third episode of Season 4 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is October 8th, 1990, written by Rick Berman and directed by Robert Bowman. Guest stars include Adam Ryan as Willie Potts, Corey Dassinger as Jake Potts, James Lashley as Ensign Kopf, Cole Meany as Miles O'Brien, and then Brent Spiner as Law and Dr. Soong.
I was about to ask whether or not Brent Spiner would be credited as...
He's
extra.
Credited in the end credits.
Is he really? Actually, mm-hmm. I didn't notice that.
Yes.
So as both Law and Dr. Soong, or just Dr. Soong?
I think it's both.
As both. Yeah, that's what Simon didn't read that line that I actually put in because I thought it was significant, but they actually named Brent Spiner as a guest star doing both Lore and Dr. Soong.
Because I remember as a small child... I didn't realize that it was Brent Spiner doing Dr. Soong at first. He's in very heavy makeup.
Right.
And, you know, you can obviously tell that Law is the same dude as Data, or at least a very, very, very good impersonator. But I actually didn't, I remember being a kid, and I remember having this realization that the old dude is the same as the android dude. So maybe they put it in there for stupid people like me.
Yeah. It was years later that I realized that it was actually Brent Spiner under all that makeup.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So, Simon, give us a little brief synopsis of what you think so far about the episode.
Well, Data is one of my favorite characters. So any episode that features him a lot, I'm gonna be a real big fan of. And this one doesn't disappoint. It's a real strong episode, I think. And it's great to see Data's creator for the first time as well.
Right. All right. Doc, how about you?
Well, Lou, following on from our conversation last week, or at least the last time we recorded, I knew that we were going to fall out in season 4 because season four is when Keiko gets introduced, and you've said some bad things about Keiko that I'm not entirely comfortable with. But you really pretty much floored me last week when you went, it was a really on-off-the-cuff remark going, Brothers isn't that good. I love Brothers. I think it's great. And rewatching it, so you know, for the folks at home, we've had a bit of a break in between recording Family and this one, and it's maybe 3 weeks or so, something like that. I haven't wanted to get ahead watching TNG too far ahead, so I think I've watched Brothers maybe 5 times in the last 3 weeks, and it's just so much fun, and I get so much joy from seeing it. And I try to look at it critically and think, well, you know, really, what's going on? What are they trying to say? There's not that much going on, and they're not really trying to say much, but they have Data, and they have Dr. Soong, and they have the great takeover of the ship scene at the beginning, and you spend time with Data, and whenever you spend time with Data, I'm just a big fan. Hmm. How about you, Lou?
Oh, well, yeah, it was close to 2 months ago, 2-3 months. I don't know if it was about 2 months ago that we did Family, or I don't remember, quite honestly. Was it that long? I'm not sure. I could play around with that and look for...
It's not relevant.
Not relevant. You're right. It's not. Now, what do I think about Brothers? I don't think I was quite right in that email. It's not that bad. It's not that great. But it's not that bad. So I think you kind of have an idea what I feel. But we'll talk more about it. So if you guys don't have anything, I'll go start with our notes.
Let's roll.
Okay. Willie Potts. Little Willie. Little Willie Willie. He's a young man whose parents are on sabbatical. First question out of the gate. James?
Yep, gone.
You and Mrs. Dr. Roberts
mm-hmm.
are serving on the flagship of the Federation, and you want to go on sabbatical. How comfortable are you leaving Cassia and the other names I don't know of all your 14 kids?
Yeah, so... I mean, I think this is rather convoluted, right? I think what they need... Actually, I don't even know why they need the brother story in there. I was trying to think, what does it possibly add? It adds one line at the end of the episode where they say something to Data and he kind of looks and goes, well, maybe. And then I suppose the only other thing I can think of that it adds is that when the title comes up and it says Brothers... You don't immediately think, ooh, Law's going to be in this episode, and it doesn't spoil the reveal. So the only good thing in my mind that comes out of these brothers is the lack of the spoiler for Law turning up. Mm-hmm. Because I have to agree, I think the idea of having these kids, you know, they needed these two on there, but they also didn't want to pay to get the mum and dad, or they didn't want the mum and dad to resolve the situation. They needed to have the scenes with Dr. Crusher and others. And I think the idea of you going on sabbatical and then leaving your kids behind, I mean, maybe if they were going to be posted from Earth and they had other family around, but the idea of leaving them on the flagship, on a military vessel, while they go off somewhere else on sabbatical, you know, I understand you shouldn't pull kids out of school, but it doesn't quite feel right to me.
Simon?
Yeah, it seems a bit like a 24th century thing that parents just abandon their kids on starships, because Beverly did it to Wesley, and now these kids' parents have done it. It just seems, yeah, perhaps it's because I'm a new parent and I kind of think, oh, well, I'm not leaving my kid for however long on a dangerous starship.
Mm. And also, if you remember that encounter at Farpoint, Picard's moaning goes, oh, they've given me a ship full of families. Well, it's not even families anymore. It's just stray children that he's got, whether it's Wesley or these two. I don't know. They clearly didn't tell Picard. Well, they didn't ask Picard permission. I'm sure it's something that Riker did on the side.
Yeah, I wonder who the temporary foster parents were. They don't really Yeah, oh, Worf. He tuck him in bed every night, or with both of them.
I mean, isn't he technically in charge of that dude from? I'm bad with names. The one from
the Bond
earlier on in season 3, the Bondin, of course.
Oh, Jeremy.
Jeremy, didn't he? Did he leave? I mean, he must have left.
Oh yeah, most likely.
Mentioned.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm sure they dropped him off the nearest starbase. But to answer your question, you know, what was the point? I think it was for the drama. You know, obviously the boy was about to die, or he was getting close to death, and you know, we need to get him to the nearest starbase, but we can't because we're diverting somewhere. So I think that's all it was about. The whole story was about Data and Lore. But
no,
you had that drama.
Yeah, sure. I accept that you need something happening with the rest of the crew, because you know, if nothing else, you have to cut back and forth, and you have to be able to break up the scenes with Data on the planet. I think the whole point is that they just tried to introduce this as a ticking clock, and
yeah,
they've done silly things in the past, like when they had the distress signal from the neutral zone, or when they've had the people getting ill and stuff like that. It's nothing more than that. I think it's very convoluted, and I don't even buy the, you know, this scene that you're supposed to see, that when you, in your mind's eye at least, that these two are fighting on some type of a laser quest, and one of them ends up trying to kill the other one, and he runs away and starts munching into fruit he finds on the tree. I mean, I don't think that's the way you get over killing your brother.
Right. And here's a couple questions to Little Willie. And that's what I'm going to call him, because I love that song by Sweet. So here, you know, Wrecker asks these questions. First, are you aware of the infectious nature of the Cove Palm? And, well, he is now, sir. And the second question was, do you have any idea why our ship even carries such deadly stuff when the antidote is a billion light years away? Or, even better, how is it even remotely possible for a young child to go running and get their hands on this deadly poison and munch away on it?
So I never quite understood. Is this supposed to be something that happened? This didn't happen on the Enterprise, right? This happened on like an away mission.
It was some kind of shore leave, I think.
Yeah. I always got the impression it was like a shore leave
thing. Did you? See, because I don't remember even a hint that we were at this starbase at the arcade and these two kids were playing around. I always assumed they were on the ship. And
but where could it be, right? I mean, it's not as if they're in the holodeck and they wander off and they eat someone's, you know, they wander into Neelix's kitchen and eat a dodgy apple.
Okay, so I guess, okay, so even if it wasn't on the ship, the question remains, who was supposed to be watching these children that one of them could get away and eat the fruit of a Cove Palm? You know, put that down. Don't you know what that could do to you? I'm still not getting how that could have happened. So I always thought the ship is just a dangerous place to be.
None of this makes sense, and none of it really matters.
Okay, then. Think. All right.
But it is a legitimate criticism, I think. I think this is kind of like a convoluted setup that they could have done better. So they could have wrapped this much better, much tighter, with a different storyline. I don't think anyone remembers back to Brothers and thinks that, you know, these two, and in particular, okay, now let me start attacking some child actors. I don't think they did a very good performance, in particular the one that wasn't dying, because there's the bit where Data takes him down to see his brother or whatever it is, and the way that he reacts to Data kind of switching off and going into go back home mode, and he almost immediately goes, oh, are you upset? Oh, I can tell that you're angry. And it, to me, it wasn't believable dialogue coming out of a child of 10 or 11 or whatever he was supposed to be. And later he walks into sick bay and his brother turns around and he goes, oh, you see, you know, he doesn't want to do anything. And I just didn't care for this little dude.
All right. Simon, anything on that?
I think the only reason for these two is to kind of compare them to Data and Lore later on in the episode, and yeah, it does nothing for me. I don't watch this episode for the kids. I watch it for Data.
Yeah, that makes sense. But of course, when you're a daddy, you know, now this little cute little boy is on the verge of dying if we don't get him somewhere.
Does anyone really believe that this little kid's gonna die?
Of course not.
I mean, did you really watch the? I think you can. There's so much. There's so much that can be potentially at stake here, right? Because you've got Data, who is about to be given a particular gift that is a potential game changer. You've got the stranded brother coming in that people didn't know that he was about. You've got the father figure that, you know, that has never been in this position with the three of them together, and you don't know how this is going to end. And this could be, you know, this could be a big step change for Data. Data could get screwed over by his brother. He could get screwed over by his dad. This can change Data's kind of arc that happens to him throughout the series. And I think you should really be building the drama on that, because I care less than nothing about the little kid and whether he gets his antidote.
Mm.
And what is this thing in Trek, by the way, about you have to get to a star base to get to the antidote?
Right.
It never quite felt right in my mind that you have the huge amount of stuff in the sick bay, but somehow every now and again, if you happen to eat a dodgy apple, you need to go to a star base. Mm. Now, I can understand the star base being a good place for getting, you know, surgery and getting things done, like when Picard had to have his heart replaced. But an antidote sounds so much... It doesn't sound like it's a starbase-y thing. And why would a starbase have a better hospital anyway? It doesn't quite make sense.
Well, go to a pharmacy and get one of those exotic medications. They may not have it. I mean, how many... What, hundreds of thousands of medicines are on the books? Yet they're made, but no one ever takes them, so they don't store them. So I guess my earlier question, what you're saying, is very valid. But I guess my last question of why would the fruit of a cove palm even be on the ship when the antidote isn't on the ship? So obviously maybe it did happen somewhere else, but still the point is, even if it was on a planet or a starbase, why would they have a cove palm that could kill somebody just by eating it and not have the ability to counter it together in the same place?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very true. I mean, I think that's clearly a hole. The stuff to disinfect you from the dangerous stuff is probably next to the dangerous stuff, because that's when people are bumping into it. So you mm-hmm. you know, you get your tanning lotion, so you get your, you know, your sunblock at the beach. You don't get it in Antarctica per se.
Right. So basically at the bar you have this vial of liquid that says this stuff will kill you, and a second vial of liquid that says this stuff will save you from that vial that will kill you. Usually, that's what it should be, but apparently it's not. Okay. So, Simon, unless you have anything, I'm going to go on.
No, nothing from me.
All right. Mr. Data. Yes, sir? Take this young man down to the quarantine anteroom. No, hold on. Matter? Antimatter. Room? Anteroom. Get a connection here?
No, it's not the same word.
Okay, quarantine anti-room.
never again shall an anti-room and a room ever meet.
No.
Otherwise they'll annihilate each other.
No. No, no, no. But so Mr. Data is taking the boy to the quarantine anti-room. When he all of a sudden we hear something in his brain go, I mean, we actually hear it. Willie didn't hear it. He was too busy. He could die. He could die. Oh, my God. What have I done? But we hear the click. And then all of a sudden, we know he's not himself, because he jerks his head this way and jerks his head that way and looks to the right and looks to the left and jerks his head up and then jerks his head down and then back and forth and back and forth. But He leaves a boy alone in the turbo lift while he goes to the bridge.
Yeah, and isn't it great that you can tell that Data is, kind of like, you know, at this point possessed Data,
mm-hmm.
Straight away, without, you know, even if you wouldn't to miss the bit where he kind of knocks his head and stuff, he goes into a different mode. He goes into, like, you know, very focused Data mode. And I have to say that the scene that comes next where he manages to walk through places and activate the, you know, the environmental stuff going offline.
Oh, you're going too far now already.
What I was about to say is that the way that gets orchestrated with him he doesn't outright pretend to be doing normal things, but they just don't notice that he's not normal. In my mind, I think you could tell that he was not normal, and I'm surprised that people didn't pick it up. Anyway, I don't want to go too far ahead.
Right, because I say, I wrote down, back so soon, Mr. Data. Yes, Commander Sherlock Riker, he is back so soon. Because him and Deanna come out of the conference room at the same time Data's entering the bridge, and they had just left each other. So, Data, where is the boy? You couldn't have gone down there fast. But nobody realizes he doesn't answer. He just goes and takes his station and starts tapping. And then here we go. So first of all, we have a course correction. And then we're speeding faster than we should be, and the police aren't stopping them. Then, all of a sudden, we have an environmental problem on the bridge, and there goes life support. Nobody figures this is Data doing it. Who else could have done all this if Geordi says, it wasn't me? That was Crusher, Wesley, that says, not by me, Commander. And Geordi's like, we shouldn't be going this fast, guys. Finally, you hear a Commander from Picard. And that's when all of a sudden the environmental goes bye-bye.
Yeah, and I have to say, I think that this particular part is, when I first watched it, you don't necessarily pick up on all of these things. But rewatching, I don't think this is as tight as it could have been. And they could have made it so that it was watertight, that you don't question Picard or in particular Riker's, you know, intelligence at not noticing. Because he outright asks Data stuff and Data doesn't reply. And I think that they could have orchestrated this scene a little bit better so that those little niggly holes weren't there. But I still like this. I still think it was great.
So, Data, who programmed the new coordinates? I think Willie Potts did, sir. At least blame somebody. But no, he was completely in remote control mode. Simon?
Yes. Yeah, I think he kind of uses the environmental life support failure as a bit of an excuse to distract them from questioning him further about the course correction and stuff. But I do think that, yeah, the life support has been turned off, but do you really need to evacuate the bridge instantly? They've still got the air that's in the bridge. It's not going to go anywhere, is it? It's just not going to be replaced. So they've got time to investigate what's going on before, let's just get out of here.
And why don't they just go to the cabinet off of the starboard side of the bridge and pull out the handy breathing adapters, you know, that has a little tanks of oxygen that all you got to do is put it on and now they can breathe forever. But they don't have such a thing. Turbo lifts, 2, 3, 4, everybody? Okay. The only time we ever see... Now, okay, you're at the captain's chair, right? You're looking at the view screen. To your right is a turbo lift. The only time I've ever seen that used is when they went to the battle bridge.
Yeah, that's right. I always thought it was the direct turbo lift to the battle bridge. I thought that was its only job.
That's what I thought as well. Because every time they've gone to the battle bridge, they've gone there. Maybe it's the quickest route, but I'm surprised Picard didn't say, no, Mr. Data, come here. Come to this turbo lift. Then again, why even 2, 3, 4, everybody? Why not just put everybody on the same one? Keep them together. But if they did that, then later they wouldn't have the opportunity to forget to lock out Data's user commands.
But they don't really forget, though, do they? It's just that he's many steps ahead of them. They don't see this coming.
I didn't think that they were enough steps ahead of him. They were. It seemed like, as much as the Romulan warbird could have bypassed Tomalak's little scout ship, but yet they kept it exactly the same speed fluctuation. They kept their distance every time. It seemed to me that they seemed to always be one step behind Data, and they could have walked over that step. So he's still on the bridge. They know he's on the bridge. What is he up to? The first thing I would have said was, computer, lock him out.
Well, there's a bit of trust, right, going on with Data. I mean, I think they are a couple of steps behind. And, you know, and maybe we're in the territory here that this is the first time that Data's been taken over by an alien influence, stroke, you know, outside influence. So maybe they don't, you know, maybe they have, by season 7 or season 8, they might have protocols where if Data looks a little bit dodgy, he immediately gets shut down and, you know, a huge electric pulse goes through him to neutralize him for the day. Even if he's just turning around to, you know, to talk to Wesley, he gets zapped. But, I mean, I don't think this was any more jarring than the numerous instances of Picard under the influence doing stuff and no one ever, you know, no one ever questioning him. I thought that this was fine.
Okay. Well, either way, Data had the sizzle. There's one we haven't had for a long time. Data had the sizzle. Okay. So, let's see here. Data's, I thought it was kind of interesting that Data was in the captain's chair. Did you think there was a message there, you know? I'm the one in charge now.
Well, I would assume that's where... He's not always, though, right, in the captain's chair. But I assume that's the best or the easiest place to do his commands from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And since he is now in command, well, he needs to be in the captain's chair. I mean, Picard's trying to get in command, but unfortunately he's been relieved for a while. So do you think they have April Fool's Day in the 24th century?
Yes.
Yes, they do. There you go. That's absolutely the right answer, because that's what happens. Don't tell me that you have never played an April Fool's joke on anybody.
Oh, so. Yes, it's explicitly mentioned in this. Are we down to the kids already? Back to the kids?
Oh, yeah, why not? I mean, we've done a little bit in engineering. They're like pretty... I don't know if incompetent is the word, but they're not in control anymore. And besides, I've got something very long about something. So go on.
Oh, no. I mean, no, I have nothing to say. Engineering are on the back foot. You know, Data completely schools them on everything. You then cut into the area where Crusher's talking to a child. And you get a couple of scenes with Crusher, which I don't particularly think they're that bad.
No.
I have a soft spot for Crusher and the stuff she does this episode. It's, you know, I prefer that it's Crusher talking to them than Troy, for example.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, anybody's a better therapist than Troy. Okay, so let's talk about this really incredibly impressive security code. Except for it missing two major things, preventing it from being perfect. Here's the code, and I'm sure everybody knows this by heart, but I don't. So it was 173-476-321-476 Charlie 327-897-7776-43-Tango 732 Victor 7311-7888-73 247-678-9764376 lock. The lock is not important, but the rest of that is. So
now, do you think that after he did that, the computer said, "I'm sorry, you must choose at least 3 out of 4 of special characters, uppercase, lowercase, and numbers."
Exactly. But I, you know something, Doc? I went through all this trouble to write this down. So, damn it, I'm going to say it.
Go on.
So when I enter this correctly on the screen, exactly like it was, sort of, the Charlie, Tango, and Victor are actually spelled out in capital letters. Now, for the sake of this analysis, what I did to try and figure out what a brute force attack would do to that code, I assume that even though the numbers are also spelled out, I will enter them as numbers. I entered them as numbers. And so what I did is I went to GRC.com. That's Gibson Research Corporation.com. Steve Gibson is the one who runs that. And I went to something he has on there called the Password Haystack. And I entered the security code as the numbers and the phonetic letter for each of the words, Charlie, Tango, and Victor, which would be C, T, and V. I tried to write them out, each number as words, but it got past 155 characters and it wouldn't take it any longer. So I couldn't really analyze that, but I kept it as numbers. When I chose the phonetic letters, each in capital, just like they're written out, it would take a hacker 2.77 billion trillion 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 trillion, that is not a stutter, centuries. Assuming 100 trillion guesses per second to hack the code. Those were all capitals. Now, when you change the second, when you change one of the letters, oh, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Those were all in lowercase. But when you change one of the letters to a capital, such as capital C for Charlie, and keep T for Tango and V for Victor lowercase, change one of them to a capital, now it goes up to 5.17 billion trillion 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 centuries. Again, assuming 100 trillion guesses per second to hack the code. Change a second letter to an uppercase, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Change a third to an uppercase, it goes back to the 2.7 billion, yada, yada, yada. Now, when I spell out the words Charlie, Tango, and Victor in all uppercase, it increased the brute force attack time to 6.12 100 million trillion 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 centuries. That's 1, 2, 3, 4 trillions. Again, change to uppercase, and the number goes to 3.98 trillion 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 centuries. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 trillions in there before centuries. And as you said before, the other thing it's missing is a special character. So I took the word Charlie and replaced the A, the first A in Charlie, C-H-A, and made it an at symbol since it looks just like an A. So it's a special character. You want to take a guess at how many of that one did?
Things I still think we're well beyond like the age of the universe in terms of the amount of time. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, I can't even imagine.
Okay, I'm almost done, so I might as well just do it because it's a lot. It's 10.34 trillion, 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 trillion centuries. So that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 trillion centuries. You know, 10.34 of those 9 to the ninth trillions, whatever, centuries. So, I don't think Geordi can ever crack that code, in other words. Do you guys agree, or would you like to argue that point?
Well, I mean, isn't Simon the IT expert here?
Oh, Simon! There you go.
Well, it's certainly a bit more secure than password one, isn't it?
A, B, C, D, or 1, 2, 3, 4. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think had he just stuck to the numbers, and I didn't put that in. Maybe somebody else could do that. But had he just stuck to the numbers, it would probably been cracked in about 5 hours.
Actually, can I be a spoil sport here and note that it is reported, and I think I saw this on... around this time in season 4 and season 5 is when I was really into Trek, when it was being aired in the UK, and I was getting watching it quite regularly. I think not around this time, but a little bit later on, they released a book which was a nitpicker's guide to Star Trek TNG, which was basically a list of all the goofs that they had. I think my copy, at least, I don't know if they reprinted, but my copy went up to the end of season 6. So it was like the send part one, and then that's it. Because it was such hot property at the time, you didn't even wait for season 7 to fully air. They pointed out to me that apparently the number that the computer displays is not the number that Brent Spiner states when he's recording the password.
No.
So maybe a slip of a tongue, or maybe the voice recognition on the computer didn't quite catch the password. So you can imagine that when Data actually gets back to the Enterprise at the end of the episode, he realizes that the password hasn't been saved correctly. He's misslipped one of the characters, and then he's fundamentally going to spend the next however many trillion centuries reverting it.
Yeah, no kidding. Or just make the computer explode. That usually happens. That did good for war games. And I was wrong, actually. I was wrong. I actually went ahead and put those just the numbers in while you were talking. And it will take 35.33 trillion trillion centuries. That's only 2 trillion trillion centuries, or 35 of them. So I think it can be done in a relatively quick speed.
A trillion's a big number.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of zeros.
As is the centuries as well, even just that.
Yeah, 35 of them. 35 centuries would be enough. But trillion, trillion centuries? Yeah, I suppose. Because it is 49 characters, which is a number. Or 49 numbers, that is. Okay, so anyway, he looks at a map. Because he doesn't know the quickest way to transport a room 1. Yeah. Did you guys study that map?
I never noticed that, but you're right. He shouldn't need to ask for the quickest way to transport room 1. But the thing is, it's not about him asking, right? It's about him informing the audience that this is where he's going, and it allows the audience to be ahead of the crew in engineering, and then for the crew in engineering to get up to speed and make the logical step so that we go, oh, look, they are making progress. Aren't they clever? So that's really what they're trying to do there. We haven't spoken about... Isn't it awesome when Data has Picard's voice?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think this... I really do love this scene as he's taking things on, because I always related to Data. I think Data's greatest character on TNG. I always thought that as a child, I'd want to be like that. And the fact that Data is, he's a relatively, small guy just sitting there getting on with the job. But when he turns, he can take over the ship at will, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Nope.
It's just so great.
Nope. And I think that's the second time that Data's done it. I believe the first time was in Encounter at Farpoint. Read back the judge's words. And he just read him back what he said. But, yeah, that is interesting. But the good thing about it is, if Picard is knocked out and the computer will only accept his commands, well, he can continue the battle. But the bad thing is that when Picard is not on the bridge, he could take over for him. But another problem here. Picard was in engineering, and Data's on the bridge pretending to be Picard, whose comm badge is in engineering. So why is Picard talking to the computer through Data's comm badge when Picard's comm badge is in engineering?
So do you think what's happening with the computer when, you know, Picard goes, you know, oh, he asks something for the computer, and then the computer gives him the answer, and then Data asks in Picard's voice, and the computer almost thinks, blimey, that was quick. And then the Picard then answers again. He goes, wow, he's certainly getting it around today.
Yes, that Picard. But still, the point is, I mean, the computer should have been able to read Picard's comm badge is in engineering, but yet he's talking to the computer through Data's comm badge on the bridge. But still, the point is, Data got to the punch before them every step of the way. And even with the map, we look at the map, and I said, I want to track when he gets out of the turbo lift. Does he take the right, right, left, right that shows on the map? He does. It seems like it. There's a few corridors where he's walking to the left a little more than I thought he would. But overall, it seemed like the map was right. However, when he gets into the transporter room, on the map, as he's walking in, the transporter pad would be on his left. But as he actually gets in there, the transporter pad is on his right, where Riker, Worf, and I think Casey may have been his name, which we didn't even mention in the guest stars. Did we? No.
No, he was mentioned on the guest stars. Okay. Yeah, he was.
Okay.
I think he's the only guy that's not the kids or Data.
Right. Right. And they're waiting for him on the transporter pad to Data's right. Riker's got his phaser in his hand, pointing at the floor. Wow, that's far enough, Mr. Data. Again, if it were me, I'd have popped him right there because Data's too fast. He could do too many things too fast. I would have phased him right there. But instead, Data's able to get a 3-meter cross seal. And the computer knew exactly the 3 meters to do.
Well, the only excuse, the only explanation that I can offer is that this is really the first time we've seen Data do this, and everyone's just taken aback at you know, how forceful he's going after what he wants. And also, you know, when has Riker actually ever successfully led like a takedown of someone that's determined to do something? I mean, we're coming up to the Ferengi soon enough. There'll be plenty of opportunity for us to... Riker doesn't really achieve a huge amount.
Yeah, but
Worf was dreadful, right? You know, the number of security guards that kind of like wandered into force fields and went, oh, it's a force field, and moved along. I mean, I hope you're not paying them well.
Well, I was just thinking that Riker would have had a solid plan if Worf hadn't said, "No, sir, let's stand back here and surprise him." Simon.
I would really hate to be Worf after this incident, having to change all the security procedures to cope with something like this happening.
I hate to be Worf during his appraisal period. Every year, Commander Riker has to give him an appraisal and says, "Okay, Worf, overall, you've been pretty good. You keep the torpedo bay well stocked. I have to admit that." Our phasers are looking good. They work. However, you've had a few security breaches. Do you want to go through all 38 of them this past year? Let's take them one by one. So I don't know. Maybe Worf just isn't the best security chief, but I don't know. But who are you going to promote into security? Would Tasha have been able to stop Data in time?
I think that Tasha has ways of preventing Data wandering off the ship. Yes, I think so.
Oh, Data!
I think that's been proven before, even when there was a direct order to get back to the bridge.
Data, it's been 3 years. Come on, big boy. I don't know. Maybe Data could still look past it and continue on to what he's doing.
It's obviously the case. Had it been Tasha, it would have been I'm sorry, you know, my homing beacon's been activated. I need to return home.
Mm-hmm.
Did it say when, Data? I assume it meant now. No.
Let me tell you more about those rape gangs.
Oh, wow, no.
Oh, man, but come on, I'm not trying to go bad here. I'm just saying that she told him the story about him before, and it got his sympathy before. Maybe it might work again this time. Going on, however. So Data beams down to a swampland, but in the middle of that would be Frankenstein's lab. Did you happen to notice the android feet laying around?
Yes, I mean, it's a bit of a... It makes me wonder how... Well, I mean, obviously Dr. Sugenreich's a complete, nutcase. But it's strange how he managed to escape. He managed to get here. He's got obviously some type of hut in the middle of nowhere. It's very... In a way, when I was growing up, I always expected Data to have been built by a respectable scientist rather than a mad scientist. But I think there's something about his character, something about Dr. Sung's obsession, I suppose, that I actually quite enjoy. I like Spiner's portrayal of him.
Yeah,
and I think he's always a good guy.
Well, the only thing I don't get is when they found Lauren pieces on a shelf. That lab looked very organized, and this one, on the other hand. I mean, he's got a little skull on the top of a bookcase. He's got android parts laying on a table. You know what I'm saying? It seemed like this is a very different Soon than what they encountered when they found Lore.
Well, no, isn't the issue that when they found Lore, he had an assistant that basically probably spent all her time cleaning up after him?
True. True.
I honestly think it's just a lack of a wife. Does that
sound? I suppose so. Hmm. I'll mention that to my wife, that even you agree. Women do more than men, hands down. So, Dr. Soon. This is interesting. Here we go. This is where we get to see the inside of a comm badge for the first and only time. And I had no idea that there would have been a blinking light in it.
Huh?
Impressive.
Yeah. It was... Why is there a blinking light?
Don't know. That's a very good...
It's never going to be seen to be blinking.
No. Mm-mm. Maybe that's their diagnostic thing. Let me open this up. Yep, lights are. It's blinking. It should be working. No, I don't know. I don't know. But, I've always observed that when they take a comm badge off, you never, ever see the back of it. So I assume that there's some kind of metal and they've got the, magnet thing going.
So how? Let me ask you a question in the real world. How do comm badges attach to the people in the Trek show?
Because
when you get when you've got a normal comm badge that you wear at conventions, and I did say that you wear at conventions. Mm-hmm. It's usually pinned on, right? It's a pin that you have. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that they remove them so much that it's obviously not a pin. I've come to it's either a magnet, at which point there has to be a metal thing inside the top, or it's some type of Velcro thing that they've also got. But I've always wondered exactly how that works.
It's very simple. Very simple. We use magnets on our name badges at work. When the salespeople, I don't use a name badge because I'm virtually an undercover person, but when they put the name badge on, they have magnets that go under the shirt and the name badge has the metal on, ping, goes right next to each, they ping onto each other.
Okay, so what connects, what keeps, does your shirt or your top, Does that have the magnet thing in place, like sewn into it?
No. Well, they would. Starfleet would. We don't, because you want to take it off and on. Once you pull the badge off, the magnet would fall down into your shirt.
Yeah, you have to catch it before it goes into your underpants.
Yes, because you don't want anything getting magnetic down there. But the point is, yes, I think that's what they do. They sew it onto their shirt so that the magnet's on the other side and the metal pin just comes, touches it, boom, you got instant comm badge. Now, if I wear a comm badge to a convention, that's exactly what I would do. Sew the thing in, blend it with the cotton, and then I'd be pulling it off left and right going, yeah, see, this is my comm badge. Boom, put it right back on. Just like they do. So you heard it here, guys. Lou said that. Mm-hmm. Anything else, Doc?
No, I'm good at this. I'm good.
Okay. Simon?
Yep.
Okay. So a few turns of Data's tooth screws, and Data's back to normal. Nobody's got anything on that one. So we'll go on to Dr. Soon. Isn't he amazing? He could be a pretty good image of, Data. Just an older image of Data, but darn it, he's just too short.
No, he is significantly shorter, right?
Yes. Although it's
because the way he carries himself. I think this is a good time to once again say I really enjoyed the performance of Brent Spiner in this episode, both as Soong and of Data. I really think that they have character moments almost throughout, mm-hmm. and you can see that Soong is trying to like teach him. But at the same time, you can tell that Soong doesn't have, he doesn't have all of the answers. At the same time, it's not as if, Data's going to become whole now that he's met his creator. I just think it's very subtle and it's very nice, the interactions, and it's not it doesn't end up being a game changer through the interaction. And in fact, the fact that they wanted to get together so that he could develop the emotion chip or put the emotion chip in is lost anyway during the plot. So I really liked it. And it's nothing more than, I said at the beginning, there's not a huge amount going on per se, but I just I sit back and I watch the interaction and I just really, really enjoy it.
Okay. I do like Dr. Soon. I will say that. He's an impressive scientist and kind of resembles a Doc Brown a little bit in a way, but I do like, I'll tell you one thing, I do love the conversation they have with, why did you create me? And, Soon actually leads Data to his own answer.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. And also, I really like the, they have the exchange where he's asking him, where Data's been asked to pat his head and rub his tummy at the same time, and he's sitting there and he's doing it like a little child, and you can see that. And Dr. Soong's going, yeah, I managed to get it right, they told me I wouldn't get it right, and he's like really, really chuffed with himself. And then he goes, oh, Data, can you whistle? And he tries to whistle and it doesn't quite work out, so Dr. Soong says, no, it's okay,
yeah, Data. let it go.
It's just so, it's so humanizing of the Dr. Soong character.
Mm-hmm.
He's clearly created something that no one else has been able to create. And he's taken pride in simple things that a 2-year-old would do. And he's ashamed of things that the android can't achieve, which are completely irrelevant. And I just think it's, I don't know. It speaks so much of a true character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it could have been so easy for this to be, Dr. Soong's like a mad scientist that's going to create Data for like an evil purpose, or Dr. Soong is some type of a holy character that's trying to create a perfect new life, or have some type of ulterior motive. And at the end of the day, you just get the impression that Soong was the guy who thought that this would be a good thing to do, not hugely dogmatically, and he was at the right time in history that he was the guy that made the advance. So again, I'll stop talking. I think it's all good stuff.
Maybe somebody else would have done it, but you're right. Yeah. He doesn't like him being in Starfleet. How disappointing. I don't know why. I think it'd be perfect for the android to learn. But let's discuss Tom Handy and his relationship with Data. This is another one of those. I analyze this quite a bit. The episode was released in 1990. Microsoft version Windows 3.0, which predates Windows NT, which actually most businesses adopted for their computers and servers at the time. Apple released the Macintosh 2FX, and that was, you know, also the Microsoft, or I'm sorry, and the Macintosh Classic. So we would speculate that the writers of TNG would have chosen for their software interface. And before anyone says they would have chosen Android, let's just keep in mind that Android was in existence. Macintosh, the Apple, which was Macintosh, and Windows were. So which one would the software engineers chosen to write Data software in? Windows, DOS, or Apple?
I mean, once again, I would defer to our resident expert.
IT guy. Linux.
I'm not quite sure what you're asking.
Well,
is Data a PC or a Mac?
Yes, or is he Linux?
He's neither. I would imagine that Dr. Soong would create his own operating system to create Data if that was required. I don't think he would base it on any 20th century technology.
Okay. Do we all three have cell phones? Simon?
Yeah.
What's the platform?
Android.
Doc?
Hello. Hey, so, okay, I am still one of the last holdouts on. I have Windows Mobile on me at the moment, but I also have an Android, which I use because I need certain things for work that I just can't get on my Windows phone.
Excellent. And I have Android too. So guess what, guys? Android wins this podcast. With one Windows, still trying its best to do something but can't. So I guess it's Android, but I don't know what they would have chosen back then. So Data has an ultimate storage capacity, and why am I explaining this when I have the IT guy over there? Data has an ultimate storage capacity of 800 quadrillion bits, and correct me if I'm wrong because I did a little computational math here. And a linear computational speed of 60 trillion operations per second. 800 quadrillion bits. I'm glad they did 800 because that's easy to come out to 100 quadrillion bytes. 1 quadrillion byte equals 1 petabyte. Is that right, Simon?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay, so
sounds right.
Okay, so Data's ultimate capacity is 100 petabytes. Which equals 100,000 terabytes. What's my point?
Yeah.
Good question. What's my point? I find it hard to believe as an Android with an ultimate storage capacity of 800 quadrillion bits and can process 60 million trillion operations per second couldn't pat his head and rub his tummy at the same time, like old Tom Handy swore that he'd never be able to do.
Okay, so you're reminding me at this point of something that I kind of stumbled across this week, because this week we've had the conversation about whether or not you're an Android phone or an iPhone dude. Maybe I'm not going to use the correct. I'm not going to use the word unfortunately, but this earlier this week, my wife decided that she needed a new iPad, and she kind of gave a big hint that I should buy her a new iPad. So I had to go out to the shop and I bought her a new iPad. And what she ended up doing once she kind of got her iPad up and running and, you know, kind of set up with all of her stuff, she spent probably a couple of hours asking Siri stuff, just stupid stuff. And realistically, I see the tasks that Data is performing here to be very similar in spirit. You know, your iPad will have a computing capacity, you'll have storage or whatever. But when you get to ask, you know, Siri, can you tell us a Star Wars themed joke, and it comes back with something vaguely plausible. I think there's a tendency for everyone to go, oh, isn't it cute? It's just like a little baby. So I think that's really where we're coming from with Data, with him patting his head and rubbing his tummy.
Okay. How about you, Simon? You don't want to be out of this conversation.
What? Why go to the trouble of programming that sort of thing into Data? It's like the with his speech. What's it called? He can't say can't.
Contractions. Yeah.
He cannot. That sort of stuff. It, you'd think you, there's probably it's probably feasible to code that into him, but why go to the trouble? It doesn't really add anything to what Data can do, really.
Okay. All right. And I hear something I never picked up on. It's kind of interesting, actually. I got that Lore was drifting in space until a fortunate encounter with the Pak-led trade ship, but I never realized he was wearing a Pak-led uniform. Or, I don't know if his uniform is the word, but Pak-led style clothing.
Sorry, is he wearing... You're right, aren't you?
Yeah.
I never noticed that.
Me either. Never noticed it at all. It seems a little big on him. But, yeah, he was wearing the Pak-led clothing.
I didn't
realize. Mm-hmm.
And actually, by the way, I think I never realized that. I never realized that at all. I really like Lore's arc, and I don't want to spoil the end of season 6. But I even have a soft spot there. I think that his time is pretty pretty great. I think it's very easy to have done just a like an evil android version of Data. But I think this episode in particular shows Lore as being something more than just an evil android. I know that he's kind of the antagonist of the episode, and you know what he does doesn't go down well at all. But you can hear in his interactions with both Data and also with Dr. Sung about you know how hurt he is, mm-hmm. and how frustrated he is, and how jealous he is of Data and how Data kind of managed to work, whereas he didn't. And you know, there's a throwaway line in the episode where he kind of asks Dr. Sung about, you know, so why didn't he just fix me? And it's said with such kind of resignation as to, you know, he didn't want to be this way, or he didn't ask to be this way, but he is this way. And he just, you know, he doesn't understand why he's had this thrusted upon him without asking. And it's, you know, it's actually some people that I know will claim that I'm not a bad person, I've just got a very bad personality. And it almost, there's a little bit of that behind Lore. So I really think that this rounds off the Lore character, in particular his interactions with Sung. And I like the fact also that Sung is coming from a kind of a father's perspective. And he thinks that no matter what Data says about you shouldn't activate Lore and he's dangerous and stuff, you know, Sung doesn't hear it. He doesn't want to hear it. He thinks that, you know, his offspring, for want of a better word, is not going to be evil. And he implicitly trusts him. Like, I suppose, you know, most fathers would implicitly trust their kids.
Right. Well, I think you use the word resigned when you said mm-hmm. Lore. And I was thinking more like sadness. I mean, it seemed like Laura was pretty sad about, you know, why couldn't you fix me?
Yeah, but almost a slight acknowledgement of it being something out of his control that he would wish to have fixed, but kind of understands that, you know, he doesn't seem like angry about it. He doesn't seem like he, you know, trying to erase this injustice. It's almost as if, certainly by the end of the episode, when he does the switcheroo with Data,
mm-hmm.
he almost is, you know, basically stating that, look, you know, you did this, you made me this way, and as a result, you're responsible for the actions that I choose to take.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, well, yeah, and after Laura shows up, there's another thing I never really noticed. It seems like no big deal, but I thought, I was thinking, why would Dr. Soon wash off the micro screwdriver he used on Laura's tooth screws? I mean, does Laura's mouth have germs? Is that even possible for an android's mouth to have germs?
I didn't notice that. But sure, he's probably got a virus of some sort.
Good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, okay, well, I was just wondering why that would be needed. Okay. So we learned that Dr. Soon is dying. And I thought, are you sure? We've been told that before.
I mean, are we expected to believe that? Because I don't think it's not quite made clear. It might have been a ruse to keep Laura around. But with other stuff going on in this episode, and with him being regretful that he didn't have the time to, like, you know, make things better for Laura, there's a part of me that kind of seems to believe him on this. Actually, let me throw a question out there. Law, he has emotions, right? He has an emotion chip.
Yeah. Does
he not?
Well.
Okay, because.
No. No.
He's gone back on what he said.
No. He doesn't get the emotion chip. At this point, not yet. He does, you know, at the end of this episode, but what I'm saying is his programming was slightly altered, or his programming was different, and the ambition was built into the program that he realized needed to be taken out, and I don't think he could have done anything to alter Lore, which is why he went and created Data. That's what I got from him.
Mm-hmm.
You were unstable. The next option, I mean, he literally said that, was to construct Data, and then he was going to get back to him. But then the big snowflake came out of nowhere, and that changed everybody's plans. So I don't think he had an emotion chip. I think he just had a bit of programming, which is why the emotion chip is going to conflict with that programming.
I think that there's, I got the hint, at least in the writer, that there was some type of basic kind of emotional processing on Law's side that I think that effectively was like switched off the Data because it didn't work correctly. And so that's why kind of, you know, the Data's so much, you know, pretty much, you know, that's why he's completely without emotion, because the bits and pieces that were in Law's programming kind of didn't really work. At least that's what I kind of took away from it. And then by the time you give him this kind of, you know, Data's emotion chip and you plug that in, he kind of goes, you know, he goes crazy, man.
Absolutely.
Okay, maybe we don't have time for this, but should Data have ever got an emotion chip?
Is it possible the writers were planning ahead?
No, I don't think so. I just personally don't think that Data should ever have got emotions. I think that there's so much more to Data without the chip than there ever was with it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to agree with you on that one, James, that it did lessen the character a bit, I think, once he had emotions, and especially once they went back on it being fused and he could turn it on and off and all that stuff. I think it did, it lessened the character a bit, I think. I think I prefer the data you get during the TV series rather than the data that's in the movies.
And the thing that I always say, and I know there are people that listen, Ben, that are going to kind of try to pull me up on this, but I don't buy that data doesn't have emotions, and I don't buy that the chip kind of turns him from someone that feels to someone that doesn't. I think that he has programming, and there's a certain, you know, if you believe for a second that data is some type of sentient being, that somehow some type of soul or spirit or consciousness has emerged from this kind of this brain that's being created, I think that fundamentally there is something going on there that you might equate to emotion. And I think that when you put the emotion chip in, I think all you're really doing is you're amplifying things and you're making them more kind of human-like. But I've always bought into the fact that deep down, data is feeling something. Because otherwise he wouldn't be stuck with stuff. Like, you know, he was stuck in this episode when he's sitting there going, I am not less perfect than Laura. Mm-hmm. And if he was just completely, completely detached, he wouldn't be focused on that. He would never get distracted in those ways. And the fact that he does, to me, just, I always take away that he has these emotions. And the emotion chip is just the thing that effectively aligns whatever inherently he has in his own brain to how he should act as a human or as an emotional human. Anyway, I'm rambling, so I'll stop rambling.
Why stop rambling? If you got something to say, let's do it. Every point is excellent. You raise very good points. That's why you're the analytical side of this, and I'm the attempted humor side of this. But okay. So as we said, this is why Data was brought here, an emotion chip. It's quite a simple procedure. I mean, lickety split. But I'm tired. I'm just too tired to take the 4.5 seconds it would take to do it. You know, I'm tired. I need time for Lore to plan a ruse to steal the emotion chip right out from under my nose and then kick the crap out of me. I'm just so tired. So, good night, boys. And didn't they just kind of, he just leaves them like standing there staring at each other? Like, who's gonna flinch? Who's gonna move?
No, he does, but he is. Dr. Soong is behaving like an old man that has complete trust and faith in his children. And, you know, that's the character. And you might claim that he's naive, or you might claim that it's not quite, it's quite convenient that he kind of leaves this door open. But I think that there's so much that. There's so much about Soong that he doesn't mistrust Laura at all. And almost as he's being beaten up, you can kind of, you get the impression that he almost doesn't seem to blame him.
Hmm. Okay.
How do you think, Laura got Data's uniform off? Did he have to find the off switch?
Wouldn't they have the same off switch?
Yeah, they should do. Hardware wise, they're identical. It's only a little bit of software that differentiates them.
Mm-hmm. Question was, when Laura removed Data's uniform, do you think maybe he was either jealous or. You know what I mean?
They're identical.
Identical? Oh. Why does his look used? What did he do?
Oh, wow.
Anyway. That's
great.
Yeah.
Do you think on the grounds that it's been mentioned before that the colonists had a problem with an anatomically correct android running around the place, he might have thought that it's either appropriate to, leave things a little bit more modest or or maybe not. I don't know. Depending on what the original reaction was.
Okay. But anyway, I'm sure that an android would have no use for a little blue or purple pill, so we'll let that one go. O'Brien is able to get an away team down to the planet by making the computer think that all three of the away team members are Data's. So that's pretty cool. Good job there, O'Brien.
Which is crazy. I mean, that's like, you could easily prevent that, right? That's like having simultaneous logins on a computer system. It's a pretty easy thing to close the door on. And how many circumstances would you need to beam two of the same person down?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In fact, had they not done this, they might have, you know, not split Kirk in the enemy within, or maybe they would. Tom Rack would never have existed. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
All of these transporter accidents where two people are in play could have been prevented.
Yeah. Okay. So let's see here. And then, of course, you know, once the emotion chip is in, Data starts to begin singing. Oh, wait, that's not Data. That's Lore. But I do like the poem. Often Wrong's got a broken heart. Can't even tell his boys apart. That's amazing.
Okay, can I be completely naive here for a second?
You never, but try.
Okay, is he saying often wrong?
Often. Because
as
if...
in often.
Yeah,
as in
often.
Not off and wrong. Often. Okay. That's what I thought it was.
Because you don't pronounce the T in often.
Yes, you do. I mean, come on.
According to Sheldon Cooper, you don't.
Okay.
Often.
It's just the way that Brent Spiner says it, in particular. I've mentioned it already. It's kind of like a great performance all round by Brent Spiner, and he does the three characters.
Uh-huh.
And he must have more screen time than any one of his characters has more screen time than the rest of the characters put together. And it's, you know, he as far as I can work out, he's never missing a beat. He's always in a good position for, you know, his Lore character is always Lore, his Soong character is always Soong, his Data character is always Data, and they never shall meet. And I think it's really good the way he does it.
Mm-hmm. Right. But yes, you're right. It took a few days to learn all this and get the steps down, but I think Brent did a wonderful, wonderful ability. Do you think he'd collect three paychecks?
Now, was he... We mentioned he was not in Family, right? I think Brent Spiner was not in Family.
Mm-mm.
And I am not sure whether he is in Suddenly Human to any great extent. Obviously, the one that comes up next. So I hope it, at very least, if he didn't get three paychecks, at least he got a bit of a holiday before and after.
Okay. It made up for the time he wasn't in Family. Or, yeah.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Often Wrong's got a broken... Yeah, so that chip just wasn't designed for Lore, which I guess I don't know. Like I said earlier, I did ask the question on my notes, why not? I mean, they're the same android, but I guess with a little bit of programming difference, it was meant for a software version that is not compatible with Lore. So, which is why it's... causes him to become the Borg Queen someday.
I mean, have you ever tried using the wrong, display driver for just a particular version of the chipset? Mm-hmm. I mean, all crazy stuff happens. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't just plug it in and assume it's going to work.
Right. I even remember trying to upgrade a Zune one time, which you can't find anymore. And if you upgrade the wrong version, it bricked it. So, that can happen.
So do you think that's what happened to Lore? So no, I mean, every now and again, you have these. In this episode, in fact, there's a bit where Picard, at the beginning of the show, he says, "Now it's time for emergency source of separation," and then Wesley goes, "Oh, but Captain, do you know the risks?" And he says, "I am aware of the risks." And you know that whenever they do something that's risky, nothing ever bad happens because that's the way it works. And in my mind, I'm always sitting there thinking, wouldn't it be good if Picard actually chose to go down this path and then the ship blew up? And the point now I'm thinking with Lore is that imagine if Lore decided to put the emotion chip in his brain, he beams off, and literally within half an hour, Lore's bricked there. He's unable to be turned on, and he's sitting there in space after having a failed software update.
Right.
I suppose serves him right.
Mm-hmm. Get what you get, and you don't throw a fit. You ever heard that?
Never.
Okay. So the away team is able to beam down all three Datas, and they're able to find Dr. Soon. What do they do with the doctor? No. I have no desire to die anywhere else. Do they really leave him alone, laying there dying? Or did they, you know, because Willie Potts had to get to the starbase quickly, so we didn't have time to stand there and wait for Dr. Soon to die.
Yeah, okay, I have to admit that when I rewatched this, when I watched this the first time around and many, many times, I was thinking, okay, you know, it's not an issue, but trying to watch critically and knowing that you were coming in a little bit lower than my opinion, I was thinking, okay, does this make sense? And it doesn't make sense. Dr. Soon basically says, it's okay, I need to die now, so Data, you go off with your friends, I'm going to crawl into this corner, and I'll be dead within the hour. Yeah, that sounds about right. And he kind of shoos them away, believing he's got certain death imminent. And, you know, whatever the... you're not told what's wrong with Soong in terms of his illness. And it's not clear that he's going to die after being kind of beaten to death by Lore. Because if he's going to die of kind of being hit and being hurt, then, you know, surely even Crusher should be able to take care of him. And he only needs to beam up to the Enterprise. So I think that, yes, this was a convenient way of tying up the loose ends. They needed Soon out of the way, and this was, you know, the way they chose.
Right. Okay. Well, he's out of the way for... Yeah, exactly. He's out of the way. But I don't know. See, I'm trying to think, what would have been future storylines for Dr. Soon? Upgrade Data software once in a while?
Well, fundamentally, you can't have the storyline, right? It's not, you know, he's an orphan child. He is trying to find his way in life. He's got this mysterious, like, father-like figure that he can't, you know, he fundamentally can't meet and have a relationship with, because it kind of destroys a lot of the Data character. And I don't know, it just, to me, it seems that they dramatically needed to neutralize this character as soon as he was brought into the story. And I suppose the only thing I'd say is that I think they do it in a clunky way.
Okay.
They could have just beamed him up to the ship and he die a few hours later in sickbay. They didn't have to, I don't want any medical treatment, I'll just die in the corner. They could have done it a bit nicer.
Mm-hmm.
So that is absolutely true. And it could have also, you know, had they explained that Dr. Soon was a... They needed a couple of lines with Dr. Soon saying, look, you know, I've only got, say, 7 days to live because something's gone wrong, and I've just managed to finish off this chip, and I've managed to get you over here, and all of the things that we kind of can read between the lines, but it's never explicitly stated. It just ties up this... It ties up the fact that you don't have to have him die in the corner after being beaten by his estranged son.
Right. So the next people who arrive at this lab are going to find the stinking dead remains of a Dr. Soon.
Mm-hmm.
That makes no sense. Or maybe they're going to come back and get him in a couple months. All right. Okay, so we're back on the ship, and the Boris, obviously, they got him to the starbase in time, and Little Willy is doing just fine. Little Willy, he's doing just fine. And life goes on. Why? They're back together playing because brothers forgive.
Okay, don't you think that was slightly insensitive, given that they clearly would have known what had gone on the planet? I mean, it's a little bit too pointed in a way, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, of course, Data, you know, brothers forgive. I mean, you're not still holding a grudge about Lorcan and your dad, are you? It was a little bit too pointed.
Hmm.
And I actually think that, you know, I think that when I mentioned right at the top of the show that this was a, you know, this was a line that they wanted to use, I frankly thought that the line wasn't that great. And I don't leave this episode thinking that the two boy storyline was a, you know, was an appropriate counterbalance to the Law and Data storyline. So yeah, I think it's very much throwaway.
Okay. All right. Simon, anything else?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, then I guess it's time to go on to our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Simon, you are our guest, so I think you should get to go first.
Okay, brothers, I like this episode. I think it's a great explanation of the family dynamics between the three of them, the two brothers and Dr. Soong. I love that section. And I love the way that Dr. Soong talks to Data about why he was created. I think that's another great bit of the episode. And I think I will give this, it's probably a 4.5. Yeah, 4.5.
4.5. All right. Okay, and we always like to try to leave the episode on a high note, so I'll go next. I don't know, really, I don't have much to give on final thoughts on. We've said pretty much it here. It's an okay episode, leaning more towards I didn't care much about it, to be honest. I don't really get into Lore. I could really do without him. You know, especially, like I said, when he becomes the Borg Queen. But the story isn't a one. There's some elements of danger, you know.
Sorry, hang on. What? 1 second. The story isn't a one.
No, it's not a one. It's not that bad.
No, no, but I mean, there's no discussion about whether it's a one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, keep going. Keep going.
Thank you. Okay, so there's some element of danger to it, and the child's life is on the line. And since I'm a daddy, I get that danger. So the boy storyline, I think, gives it an extra point. I like the conversations with Dr. Soong and Data. So, again, that gives me another point. So in the end, it's not a 5, and I can't even go 4. So I think I'm in the middle of the road with a 3. I like the conversations with Dr. Soong and Data, and I kind of like the danger aspect of the boys. And it all circles around brothers forgive. And, you know, Data's wheels are turning, and starts tilting his head again. So we'll see. All right, Doc. Did I disappoint you too much?
No, that's okay. That's okay. Because, as I've mentioned before on numerous occasions, I'm an absolute apologist that shouldn't be on a episode review podcast. It's just one of those things. This episode has a whole bucket load of flaws, right? You know, the storyline with the kids is neither here nor there. They have to kill off an old man just because he's inconvenient to the plot to stay alive. You have contrivances that bring these things together. But you only have to have the following in place to make this episode great. And that's, you've got the scene where Data is taken over the Enterprise. He is on top form, and it's great to see him completely obliterate any security procedures and security protocols that they have to prevent this happening. Mm-hmm. He is in complete control. You know, I'm at no point am I thinking, oh, I wonder if little Willie's going to die. No, that doesn't come in. I'm sitting there thinking, I respect Data. He's, you know, he's an unstoppable machine here. So that part of the episode is great. And actually, this kind of harpens back to when you have things like Power Play, where Data gets abducted, or Clues, where he's like being all shifty. You know, Data, when he's not on your side, is awesome. And I mean, you know, wouldn't it? Well, maybe I shouldn't say this out loud. Wouldn't it have been great to have like a mirror universe Data? I know that Laura is more or less the same thing, but Laura's he's slightly different. I think this Data going for what he wants and achieving it is just a, you know, I really enjoy it. The next thing is that the story of Data and his creator and his brother all behaving like a family, with the discussions that they have and how it's so clear that there's this kind of family love, despite them, you know, one of them being a 100-year-old man and the other two of them being an android, one of which at least is kind of, you know, seriously gone a bit crazy. There's just so much humanity in that story that is being told in my mind. And I just really, you know, I have, we've been on hiatus for a little while, and I have watched this episode, you know, back to back to back to back to back. It's usually something I'll put on. You know, I carry my laptop with me on the train and on the late nights homes. It goes on, and it's a great episode. I haven't got bored of it from watching it at least 5 times over the last couple of weeks. This is a full 5 out of 5 from me. It's not a perfect episode. There are better episodes. Technically, it has faults, but I just love it. And if, you know, if after this show, after us having discussed it, someone said, hey, do you want to go and watch Brothers? I'll be up for Brothers again. Hmm. I think this is one of these shows that I can watch at any time, for any reason. Okay. So, you know, I can't ask more than that from a show. And maybe it's just me being kind of connected to Data. Maybe it's just me like, you know, having this emotional investment in Data. But I really do like it. Anyway, okay. 5 out of 5.
5 out of 5 it is. Okay, then. I'm the lone holdout. So I'm now at the end. I'm at the bottom. 4.33 for the season. I've dropped after my first 2 5s. So, Doc, you're in the lead this year so far. 4.67, and our guests have 4.5. So, Simon, thank you again for coming on. And I believe we're going to have you again for Identity Crisis.
Yep.
And I'm trying to remember that by name. Here we go. Okay, got it. And I like that one too.
Yeah, Geordi in the old red uniform on a planet somewhere turns it into Lizard Man.
Right, right. And trying to solve a mystery with who is either his big sister, his foster sister, stepsister, old lover who calls herself his big sister. I don't know. We'll find out then, won't we?
Yep.
Okay.
I don't remember that bit.
Okay. Okay, so why don't you join us next week, everyone, as we review Season 4, Episode 4, Suddenly Human, and we are going to have a new guest on who will be coming to us deep from his spying network in the Romulan Empire. All I'm going to say is his name is Brad.
Next time on Star Trek, The Next Generation, a shocking secret torments an orphan child.
Injuries so severe, they might be considered torture.
Only Captain Picard can protect him from a violent father.
If he is not aboard the Khmer in 5 minutes...
Threats could lead to war. Vengeance could end in tragedy. On the next exciting episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation.
So, join us next week.
I'm not aware of this yet, am I?
You kind of are. You were in the subspace communiques on that.
I'm pretty sure I wasn't.
Oh, no?
This is the first I've heard of this.
Well... Maybe I was concerned at the time that you would have outed him, and so therefore the Romulans would know who he is. So we're trying to set up a secret subspace communication. In other words, what I'm getting at is I'm not 100% sure he's going to even be on, but hopefully he will be. And we'll get to talk to Brad next week, hopefully. Again, Simon, thank you for coming on.
Oh, you're very welcome.
All right, everyone, take care and good night.
Good night.
Say good night, Simon.
Good night.
Yeah, thank you for coming on, Simon.